Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. It's a pleasure to say, joined by Rowan Scarborough, another superb national security reporter who, alongside his comrade and colleague and pal of ours, Bill Gertz, has been doing extraordinarily important reporting work in the national security arena and a 26-year career at the Washington Times. Rowan is, among other things, the author of two terrific books, Rumsfeld's War and Sabotage. Rowan Scarborough, thank you so much for joining us. Good to have you back.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
I'm anxious to talk with you about some of the things you've been reporting on, Rowan, that aren't getting, as far as I'm concerned, nearly the attention they deserve, despite your best efforts and ours. Specifically, what's been developing in Iraq as it relates to the rising influence, pretty much dominance of the place by the Iranians? You had a fascinating and really quite chilling report about some of the militias that are Iranian-backed turning on the United States forces there once they settle accounts with the Islamic State. Talk a little bit about what you found and how worrying this is, as perhaps a microcosm of a larger problem with Iran.
Sure. Go back to 2007 during the famous Iraq troop surge. Iran tried to counter that by organizing a number of extremist Shiite militias. They trained them. They took some of them into Iran, brought them back in, and they were able to kill at least 500 American troops using hidden bombs and rocketry that the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Quds Force equipped. So they didn't go away. 10 years later, those militias are still active in Iraq. They have a new mission, and that is, number one, to kill Sunni ISIL members who tried to take over Iraq. That's sort of good. You can look at it that way. But then number two, they announced over the weekend, the most vicious of these militias, the Hezbollah brigades, that once the last ISIL or the last ISIL unit is out of Iraq, they're going to turn their weapons on us, on Americans. And I think the history of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps is that they do what they say. They're very brazen. They'll take on our ships. They'll invade Syria. And so if they say they're going to do this, they're going to do it.
Well, it is indeed. And I think it's part of a larger and still more troubling problem of what Iran is up to, let's be honest, emboldened and certainly enabled by the immense amount of money that the Obama administration saw fit to transfer to Tehran as part of this, I call it the Obama bomb deal. Rowan, as you look at what's playing out here, they're perfectly prepared to collaborate with us in destroying their Sunni opponents, but they will turn on us as part of Iran's larger agenda. Some have called it this Shiite crescent that they're trying to carve out, not just in Iraq, but also in Syria and, of course, Lebanon, which through Hezbollah they've dominated for a long time. Is that basically the plan that we're seeing play out here? And what would you be counseling the United States do about it, given that we've got forces on the ground at the moment who are going to be in considerable jeopardy shortly?
Well, Frank, that's exactly what Iran is doing. They want hegemony from Tehran all the way to Beirut, going through Iraq and Syria. That's their ultimate goal. And to get us out is a corollary goal. So there's only one country that can stop them from doing this, and we haven't done a very good job so far, and that is American troops in Syria and American troops in Iraq. And that's why they're threatening to kill us, because they want us out. The answer to this is to make sure that the Abadi government — I know there's an election coming up in Iraq — but to make sure that it is a top priority of this government not to placate the Hezbollah brigade in Iran, and that to become more independent and realize that American troops have to defend themselves if you want us to stay there. I think those are the two overriding goals that our State Department has. to make sure Baghdad does not do what Tehran wants them to do, but does what Washington wants them to do.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's a losing bet, to be honest with you, Rowan. There are those who argue that what we should really be about now is just watching what's happening already be formalized, namely break up Iraq and have such U.S. forces as are going to be there, mostly, if not exclusively, located in the Kurdish areas, perhaps in some of the Sunni areas as well, but steer clear of what is going to be, I'm afraid, increasingly a proxy for Iran in the Shiite-controlled areas, including, of course, Baghdad. Let me ask you about a related issue you've also reported on, Rowan Scarborough, at the Washington Times, namely how badly the Iranian regime is treating those who've had the courage to be dissidents in that country. They've been known for their ruthlessness, their brutality. What's the latest on that front?
Well, the dissidents, again, are trying to speak out in Iran. Iran has killed thousands of dissidents, principally by hanging and other modes of execution. In 1988, I think the UN has established that they likely killed almost 40,000 dissidents in 1 year. Well, they housed them in one particular notorious prison where the conditions have gotten so bad that 20 or 30 dissidents have gone on a hunger strike. And that's been greeted with a brutal retaliation where they basically put them in hell holes in another part of the prison where they can barely exist. And even the United Nations put out a statement a couple of years ago calling on Iran to come back to some more humane reality when it comes to, if you're going to arrest people for their political beliefs, at least treat them in a humane manner. And the UN has also, in August, came out with its latest report on human rights in Iran, and they have not gotten any better. It's a very, very harsh report on what Iran is doing to dissidents and its people, despite, you know, the nuclear deal, which we thought would turn the ship of state a little bit in Iran, but it has not.
I don't know who thought that. I certainly didn't. I doubt you did, Rowan Scarborough, but I know that was the official U.S. government line at the time. It seemed preposterous then, and it certainly isn't playing out now, except in the way that many of us expected, which is we've actually emboldened the mullahs in Iran to think that they can brutalize their own people and threaten ours with impunity, alas. Let me ask you about one other issue here at home, Rowan. You turned your sights on an issue we'll be talking more about shortly with Hans von Spakovsky, one of the members of the president's voting fraud commission. I wonder what you have made of the insights you've shared with all of us about a very close vote in New Hampshire, which it seems was in fact decided, a United States Senate seat on the basis of electoral fraud. Tell us about it.
And, you know, Republicans say for years that Massachusetts voters take advantage of New Hampshire's same-day registration vote rules that just come across state lines with very little ID, no proof of where they live, and vote. And we know from Project Veritas in February, they actually had poll workers on camera saying, well, just vote and leave the state then. That's the advice that they were giving people who had no identification, and then they were allowed to vote. Well, the House Speaker in New Hampshire, a Republican, asked for some data on just one little nugget. How many people voted on election day, registered and voted on election day with out-of-state driver's licenses, and then how many of them went on to get a state license as they're required to do? About 3% did, Frank, 3%. So is that absolute evidence of fraud? No. But is it an indication that people came from out of state to vote that day but had no intention of ever residing in New Hampshire? I think it is, yes.
Indeed. And as I recall, it changed perhaps that Senate seat from the Republicans to the Democrats, if assuming, as I think we can reasonably do, those folks from Massachusetts were not coming across to vote Republican. Rowan, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Your reporting, as always, is extraordinarily important and much valued by us. We appreciate the time you give us to talk about it again, now and again. We look forward to doing that with you very soon. In the meantime, keep it up at the Washington Times, my friend. And folks, check out his two books, Rumsfeld's War and Sabotage. Required reading. Thank you, Rowan. We'll talk with you again soon. Next up, Hans von Spakovsky on electoral fraud and more. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.